Okay, so welcome back. So this is going to be a chazar shir on the topic of Ede Chasima and Ede Mesira. And what we're going to speak about today is just the framework that we've been setting up for the first few shirim of the sugya. We're not going to speak about what we did yesterday. I think what our goal should be is to set up this, again, this framework wherein there's a lot of conceptual ideas that have been floating around. I want to sort of give a structure to them, and that way, in the future, in the next few shiurim, when we start reading these Rishonim inside, and Rebbe is making the points in the Rishonim while reading them, when you're equipped with that initial structure going into it, you'll see where the points that Rebbe is mentioning fit in, if that makes sense. Like, that was a lot of what we were doing like yesterday a little bit, with beautiful reading of the Ramban. Seriously, everyone should give Yinon like a huge round of applause. That was amazing. I don't know anyone in their first year. I don't. That was crazy. So, but either way. So, the point is that we're gonna be doing that a lot. We're gonna read Rambans and Melchamosus and Sefer Zchusus and Ravids and Balmors and make these aros. And it's important, therefore, to just come into it with like a certain set of like, where's this fitting in? Where's our structure? What are we trying to do here? We're not just reading Rishonim and translating, but we're actually trying to fit them into this greater thing that we're building up. So let's try to just do that. Don't worry, we just started. So yeah, I sent out the outline on WhatsApp, and hopefully, so now with that introduction of like what the goal of this is, so let's actually get into the Tochein HaDvarim. So there's the background. So first, let me say there's I think really three main points to this Chazarish here. One is just like the background, which we'll talk about in a second. The second is really getting to the crux of things. What is the debate between Rav Meir and Rav Elazar? And then the third thing is, what is that impact? What are the nafkaminas to those different perspectives on what the debate is? So the first thing is just the background. You have a machlokas between Rav Meir and Rav Elazar. What is Karsi when it comes to Gittin and Shar Shtaros as well? Is it Edei Chasima Karsi? Is it the signatures of the witnesses which are going to be Karsi? Or is it the Ede Mesira, the people who witness the transfer of the document from one hand to the other, which is going to affect the change? So which one is it? Ede Chasima or Ede Mesira? Rav Meir is of the opinion, Ede Chasima Karsi. And Rav Elazar is of the opinion, no, Ede Mesira Karsi. This comes up because we're trying to figure out in the Gemara who is the Tana of the Mishnah, which says, Bafani Nechtav, Bafani Nechtav, Nechtam, which seems to require both to be Lishma. So who would that be? Because it sounds like Rav Meir and Rav Elazar only require one and not the other to be Lishma. So the Gemara tries to figure out who is the Tana of the Mishnah. But this brought us into a larger discussion about the debate itself between Rav Meir and Rav Elazar. And the Gemara, in fact, when trying to figure out who the Tana of the Mishnah is, the opening Mishnah of Gittin, tries to connect many seemingly, or we could have thought at least, peripheral questions to this debate between Rav Meir and Rav Elazar. So, for example, the Gemara says that what needs to be lishma for a get is actually part of this machlokus between Rav Meir and Rav Elazar. According to Rav Elazar, since the pasuk, the kasav, is not referring to chasima, but instead the ksivas haget, so the ksiva needs to be lishma, whereas Rav Meir holds no, the kasav is referring to the chasima, and therefore it's the chasima which needs to be lishma and not the ksivas haget. So this important debate is actually affecting what needs to be written lishma in the get. So too, it would also affect, therefore, what needs to be, how do we fix the problem of mechubar? Let's say I write a get, and it's mechubar lakarka. So I write it on a leaf. So the Gemara later on is going to tell us that when it comes to gittin, there's a concept called kasa v'nasan, that there can't be any intervening maisa in between the ksiva and the nesina saget. So what's considered the ksiva saget? So according to Rav Elazar, it's an actual ksiva hashtar, where according to Rav Meir, it's the chasima sashtar, because that's what the pasuk v'kasav refers to. And therefore, according to Rav Meir, you have a kula. If I write the get b'mechubar, but I then do ktsitsa and sign the get after it's already disattached from the ground, that's okay, because that's still v'kasav v'nasan, even though I wrote the get while attached to the ground, because the ksivas haget for Rav Meir is not as important as the chasimas haget. And we also saw that maybe Rav Elazar being moda to muziaf mitocho is part of this debate. We spoke about maybe muchach mitocho. So it sounds like a lot of sugyas are connected to this debate between Rav Elazar and Rav Meir. On top of that, the Rishonim also add a fair share of sugyas that didn't seem like they should be connected, and yet they are. We have a debate between Rav and Shmuel about Shtei Sharas Hayotzim Yomechad. Let's say there's one field, and the person who owns the field sells the field twice in the same day. So who's the owner? How do we decide who the rightful owner is? So there's a machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. Do we say Yachloku, they should split the field, because we don't know who the real owner could be? Or no, we should say Shuda Dedaini, let the Dayanim decide, which we spoke a little bit about yesterday, right? The benefit of Yachloku is everyone gets something, but that also the downside is also the rightful owner is losing out on half of what he might be rightfully warranted to receive. Whereas the benefit of Shuda Dedaini is that the actual owner of the field might get 100% of the field, but the downside is if we get it wrong, then the actual owner of the field will get nothing. So that's Machlokes Din Rav and Shmuel. And the Gemara says, actually, that Machlokes Din Rav and Shmuel also depends on Rav Meir and Rav Elazar. And if you look there, a lot of the Rishonim try to figure out, you know, there's Rashi and the Ramban here and the Melchamos. They try to figure out what does that mean? Why does that Machlokes depend on Rav Meir and Rav Elazar? But certainly, as Tosos points out, it's something we wouldn't have necessarily expected, but the Gemara does. And you also have the Sugya of Shnei Gittin Shinis Arvu, which Tosfos and all the notes that came on the Rif point out as well, that if you have a shliach come and he has two gets with the same names on it, so what is he supposed to do now? He mixed them up. So the Gemara says he should, or the Mishnah says he should give both gets to both women. And the Gemara ends up saying, oh, that's only according to Shitas Rav Meir. Because for Rav Elazar, you also need Nisina Lishma. And you don't have that when you're giving a get that you don't know to a woman that you don't know if it's really her get. So, what we see in this background is that there are a lot of different webs that this machlokas is creating. It's affecting a lot of different areas, and that seems very strange, because at first glance, we would have thought, this is a machlokas on a shtar. What is koreis a shtar? It doesn't necessarily seem like such a fundamental question, but yet, it affects so many sugas, it touches on so many different topics, which leaves us wondering why that's the case. So that's really the first step and the background to the whole sugya. Okay, so now let's get to some of the lambdas. What is the machlokas between Rav Meir and Rav Elazar? What exactly are they debating? Eidi Mesira Karsi, Eidi Chasima Karsi? What's the difference, and what does that tell us about their conception of shtaros? So the way to go about doing this, and what we did a little bit, was to try to figure out what is the advantage of Eidi Mesira. And what is the advantage of Eidi Chasima? Because if you could pin down those advantages, then you could figure out, well, this person likes that advantage better, and this person likes that advantage better. That sounds a little vague, but what I mean by that is that the advantage of Eidi Mesira is certainly that the Eidim witness the event itself. Right? Eidi Chasima, they sign a shtar, but they don't know what happens. They're not there for the Mesira's hashtar. So the benefit of Eidi Mesira is that they witness the event itself. So if that's the case, why does Rav Meir like Eidei Chasima? What's the benefit of Eidei Chasima? So we said that the benefit of Eidei Chasima is the Raya Shavo. That even if the Eidim don't necessarily witness the actual Maisa and the Mesiras Hashtar, at least there's a Raya Liyamim Rabim. There's something there that we could look back at to tell us what happened, you know, even a few years, decades later. So if that's the case, what is Rav Elazar's response? If Rav Meir is basically telling us the what's koveya ashtar is the fact that it serves as a raya, which is very understandable. It's a legal document, and it's meant to tell us something. It's meant to tell us what happened. So of course we do care about the raya. So if that's Rav Meir's conception, if that's what he thinks is the ikar hashtar, the raya, so what does Rav Elazar say? What is his response? And that's really where we came up with three different ways of looking at Shitas Rav Elazar on Eidei Mesira. Can I just say these and then we'll go, unless it's on that point. Okay, yeah. That might get back to like what we'll say it again. I think you're assuming that the Ikur and the Koris are separate, but I don't know why that's. Like, the fact that it's the Ikar Ashtar is probably the reason why it is Koris. And number two, I think we might get back to when we talk about, like, the Eidei Kiyom aspect in the Rambam. That's my, I think, what were you going to say? Right, that, oh yeah, exactly. That also shows, like, you have like a shlita over the object.
That is the key. You move from the fact that it is a raya from not to some raya. That is the key.
Right. Exactly. So I think that there are three ways that Rav Elazar responds to this point of Rav Meir, that the shtar is all about the raya. So either, all right, so but just backtrack on just on that point, that's only if you could say that if you're trying to like ede mesira-ify Rav Meir.
Yeah.
But we might not do that.
That would be pulling it.
Right, exactly. We might not do that. So that's just one thing to keep in mind.
You might say that even without an agenda. You might say that is Shitas or Meir. From that, it would be Yotze that there's less of a...
Right, exactly. Agenda. Exactly.
I don't think the Rav is saying that with an agenda of me, the Meir.
Right, okay, that's true. So now there are three ways that Rav Elazar could respond to that point, that the shtar is all about the raya. So either Rav Elazar could say, you know, I like Eidei Mesira, because I don't need a shvuyei shtara. I don't need anything of that sort. Raya is not important. All I care about are the Eidei Mesira. Even if they're not mishtatef to the shtar, they're not going to be written there, liyamim rabim, meaning there's no a shvuyei shtara. A shvuyei shtara requires Eidim in order to turn this paper into something more. Rav Elazar is saying, I don't care about that. As long as you have Eidim on the Maisa, there's a Kinyan. And that's what matters. The Raya is not important. That's the first understanding. The second understanding of Rav Elazar is no. Yes?
Sorry, does that say that a temporary Raya is enough, or that I don't need a Raya at all?
I don't need a Raya at all. That's what you're saying is going to be like, the third understanding of Rav Elazar. The second understanding is that a Shvuyei Shtara is required, but meaning I need some sort of presence of Eidim in order to turn this shtar into something. But Eidim Mesira are able to accomplish that through their presence. Right, so again, the first one is, I don't even need a Shvuyei Shtara. The paper is not going to serve me anything at all. It's only about the Gavra Eidim witness the event. That's all that matters. The second one is, no, of course a Shvuyei Shtara matters. I can't get away with creating a Kinyan without some sort of shtar. But I don't need the Eidim to sign the shtar and have it serve as a Raya. I just need the Eidim to witness the event. And they're sort of being mitzarev to the shtar. Their presence is combining with this piece of paper to create a legal chalos. But it's not going to help me later on. So that would mean that the Eidim Mesira are helpful for a Shvuyei Shtara, but not for Raya. So, the third perspective is that, like Uriel said, the Eidim Mesira are even beneficial as a Raya. How are the Eidim Mesira beneficial as a Raya? Certainly, we can't say that they're as beneficial as a Raya like Eidei Chasima are, because they're not on the document itself. But in comparison to other Kinyanim, Lagabe, other Kinyanim, so the Eidei Mesira are more of a Raya, because by other Kinyanim, we don't have anything. There are no Eidim at all. You could just be Kona something without Eidim. And therefore, Eidei Mesira would still be a Raya. And like I think we mentioned, you know, they're a Raya as long as they're alive, for sure. We could always bring them in and ask them what happened. It's definitely better than nothing. So that would be so those three ways of looking at Rav Elazar are basically ways of understanding this machlokas between Rav Elazar and Rav Meir. And what they really test, I'll get to you in a second, Ezra, what they really test is how much and how far is the gap between Rav Elazar and Rav Meir. Are these two totally different conceptions of shtar? Is Rav Meir saying, all I care about is the raya? Maybe because I need the raya is what shows the greatest bilus on something, or just the raya is just all that he cares about. That's the ikar hashtar, because that's what a shtar is, or some other reason. But on the other hand, you have Rav Elazar, who's saying, no, I don't care about even the shtar at all. All I care about is the mesira. All I care about is the kinyan. Or are we saying, on the opposite extreme, Rav Meir is all about the raya, and so is Rav Elazar. Just they argue on the details, and in the middle you have this other conception. But again, the point is, in sum, what we're really weighing is how fundamental is this machlokas between Rav Meir and Rav Elazar. Are they arguing about the details and thresholds of a raya, or do they have two totally distinct and different understandings of what we're talking about here and what's going to be kores ashtar? Yeah, Ezra.
According to the Ramban, there is a theory. So how does the
Right. So that would be like I said, to keep, like, kind of, you could always go in both directions. Like, how much are we going to bridge? Are we going to, like, Ede Mesirify Rav Meir and say, like, oh, well, if you're talking about Raya, so, or, well, I guess, or this would be Rav Meiring Rav Elazar, meaning if you're talking about the Raya, so then actually Rav Elazar is a better Raya. Because, like you said, like, oh, you have the, you know, the presence of actual people as opposed to, like, a piece of paper. So it's the same thing as this third way of looking at Rav Elazar, that the Edom Asir are a Raya. And you could either say, because it's in relation to other Kinyanim, or you could just say, like you said, that the presence of the Edom is better than a piece of paper. But all of them are ways of showing that either we could take Rav Meir and bring him closer to Rav Elazar, we could take Rav Elazar, bring him closer to Rav Meir, or we could say, no, these are two totally separate tracks. They're not the same at all, and don't even mention them in the same sentence. Yeah, Uriel.
In the second version of Rav Elazar, are we suggesting then that the star would serve as a Raya if the Hades are doing carving a Shmir star?
So I don't think so. And that's what I wanted to, I was going to get back to. So in this middle view, right, so again, the two extremes are, number one, Rav Elazar doesn't care about a Shvi Yishtara or a Raya. In the third one, he's basically saying almost the same thing as Rav Meir, just with lower threshold for what's considered a Raya. And in the middle, he's saying, we do need a Shvi Yishtara, not a Raya necessarily, just I need like a Shtar in order to have a Kinyan, but Ede Mesira could do that. That doesn't mean he thinks it's a Raya, though. It's not going to serve as a Raya. That's only the third view. And why Rebbe was mentioning this middle view is like the what he was calling the eight, I think the Ede Kiyam view, which we're going to get back to in the Rambam. But just one thing, what I was about to get back to, and that, so it's a great segue, is that one example Rebbe was showing was Kinyan Suder as precedence for this thing. Because if you want to say that the purpose of Ede Mesira are Ede Kiyam, so then how are you going to apply that to Shar Shtaros? Because we know, as we saw yesterday, that there's a big machlokus Rishonim. Do we pass in like Rav Elazar only for Gittin, or do we also pass in like Rav Elazar for Shar Shtaros? So if you think that what Rav Elazar is saying by Gittin is that we would require Ede Kiyum, do other Shtaros require Ede Kiyum? And Rebbe said, if we look at Kinyan Suda, the evidence might be yes, because there's a big machlokus Rishonim there also. Do you need Ede Kiyum for Kinyan Suda? There's a machlokas that says, Kinyan bifnei shnayim, vein sarach lomar ksovu. Kinyan, stam kinyan in the Gemara is kinyan suder. So the Gemara sounds like saying kinyan bifnei shnayim. A kinyan needs to be in front of two people. Sounds like edekiyam are required. And Tosfos already says, no, that's not what the Gemara means. And the Rambam says explicitly, don't think that this kinyan needs to have edekiyam. It doesn't. And what we were trying to show, though, is that maybe for Kinyan Suder, we wouldn't require Ede Kiyam. Maybe it's too far of a chiddush to say that a Kinyan, like Kinyan Suder, requires Ede Kiyam. But what Rebbe was trying to show is that we're so close to saying it by Kinyan Suder. That like it was such a hava mina. Like for the Rambam, Kinyan Suder is based on Das HaMischayev. We saw earlier in the year that the Rambam says if a katan can't write he can't do Kinyan Suder because he also can't write a shtar. And all the Nosei Kalim are like, what does that mean? What does Shtar have to do with Kinyan Suder? Why does a Katan's ability to write a Shtar affect the fact that he can't do a Kinyan Suder either? They're different things. And Rebbe is fond of saying that, no, they're the same. They're based on the same principle. There's a common denominator called Das HaMischayev. When I do Meshicha, it's not a Kinyan Das. It's me pulling the object into my territory. There's something that's, or a Kinyan Chatzer. It's my property enveloping it into my possession. But what am I doing? When I make a Kinyan Suder, the object that I'm making the kinyan on, this pencil, is totally disconnected from the house I'm buying or the kiddushin I'm doing. So how does kinyan suder work? And Rebbe likes to say that it's a kinyan bidas mischayev, that it's like it's your commitment to something. And the lifting of this is just a way of highlighting that commitment. And it's concretizing that commitment with a real thing. And shtar is really the same way. I'm not picking up a piece of land when I buy it. I'm not, you know, digging my shovel into the ground to be kone it. I'm using a shtar, but the shtar is not the piece of land. So what is connecting me to the land? It's the das hamischayev and the commitment, which is concretized by the shtar. So we see this connection between kinyan suder and shtar. And so why is there this havamina that there would be a need for Ede Kiyam for Kinyan Suter? Because it's the most amorphous, ambiguous type of Kinyan. Maybe, not only do I need to lift something to concretize my Das, I need Ede Kiyam there to show this is a real thing, this is a real Kinyan, it's not just a magic trick. And the Rambam, he has to tell you, there are no Ede Kiyam. Because specifically for the Rambam, there's a Havamina that there should be. So maybe we reject, and there are the Gaonim, which the Ravid quotes, do think that we paskin Ede Kiyam are necessary for Kinyan Suter. So maybe, when it comes to Kinyan Suter, that's too much of a Chiddush. But we'll see, maybe for Shtar, Ede Kiyam are necessary. And in fact, we saw that the Rambam says, when it comes to Kinyan Shtar, Edim are necessary. And there's Machlokas, how do you interpret that Rambam? And some say, it means you don't need Ede Chasima, but you need Ede Mesira. Which makes it sound like for Kinyan Shtar, we require Ede Kiyam. And so maybe that's this middle view of Rav Elazar. Does that make sense? A little convoluted, but tried to present it clearly. Yeah.
That would be similar to the problem, or maybe Tom's understanding of
Right, so I think that's why I was thinking Rav Chaim more. Like when we put in all this legwork into Shtar, so that's really what we've been trying to show. That there's this whole component of like Das Mischayev, and that's what the character of a Shtar is. It's like the commitment, which turns the paper into more than just ink on a scroll. Good? The Kinyan Suter thing made sense? Yeah? Okay. I know it's a little complicated. It's a lot of things we discussed last year also. Yeah?
Are we trying to prove in Kinyan Suter that Kinyan in general have the Das Mischayev, or that specifically just Shtar? Meaning, the fact that even by Kinyan Suter, we have how many that shows by Shtar, maybe we actually say it, or we're trying to see even by other Kinyan.
Right, so I think it would be very far to say that all Kinyan require Ede Kiyam. But I think what Rebbe was saying was, if you think that for Rebbe Lazar, Ede Mesira are Ede Kiyam, so, and we paskin like Rav Elazar by Shar Shtaros. So specifically for Shar Shtaros, do we need Ede Kiyam? Is there any evidence for that? And what Rebbe's showing is that, yeah, maybe Kinyan Suder requiring Ede Kiyam is too far. That's why it's rejected Lamaskana. But the fact that it's a Havamina, based and because of the Das Mischayev component, so maybe Shtar will accept it. Maybe Shtar is more Das Mischayev than Kinyan Suder. And we see that, again, from the Rambam. The Rambam says, oh, if a katan can't write a shtar, can't do a Kinyan Suter. So you see that there's this overlap, and maybe even like the paradigm of Das Mischayev and more powerful version of it is shtar. And so we'll say that you require Ede Kiyam for a shtar, possibly. We'll see. I think we're going to get back to it. That's what I think when Rebbe keeps saying we're going to get to Ede Kiyam, I think that's what he means, this middle view. Noam, you had a question? No? No? Okay. So, again, we have Rav Meir and three views of understanding Rav Elazar's response to that, and these are ways of gauging how far the gap is between these two shitas. Yes.
What's your default explanation of Rav Meir right now?
I think we're saying that Rav Meir, Rebbe did mention, he said you could say that even Rav Meir's Ede Chasima are meant to be like Ede Chasima, or Ede Mesira, sorry.
That's the Rambam.
Right. So I don't think we're up to that yet. So right now I'm just using it as like a raya.
Meaning what?
That Rav Meir thinks that the purpose of the shtar is that it's omid liyamin rabim, and that's what's going to be kores. That the ability to use the shtar as a raya is what affects the kinyan.
The default explanation of Rav Meir is what Rav Meir
wrote. I think so. Yeah, that the ability for something to serve as a raya is what gives it the kinyan status. And if it can't be a raya, right? That's why we said like mizuyaf mitocho and yachal is daif and muchach mitocho are going to be bigger problems for Rav Meir than for Rav Elazar, because if it can't be a type of paper that'll serve as a raya later on, so then the whole kinyan doesn't work in the first place. Because me, like Akiva was mentioning from the Rav, the ability to be kona is I need to show that I'm in control. The way to show I'm in control is I have this paper that's going to last until it disintegrates. So that's, I think, the default view of Rav Meir for now. Like you said, we'll see. How does that get changed when we maybe expand Rav Elazar's view? Good? Okay. So now the third section. Let's get to the nafka minas. What are the issues which are impacted by our analysis of this debate? So first of all, we started off saying that it's very interesting that the Gemara and the Rishonim mention so many areas in which Rav Meir and Rav Elazar come up, that these seemingly disconnected peripheral sugyas are connected to the debate between Rav Meir and Rav Elazar. And now with our analysis in mind, that makes a lot of sense. That because Rav Meir and Rav Elazar are not just arguing about the details, but something much more fundamental, according to one of the ways which we portrayed it, so then it would make a lot of sense that that would affect Lishma, and Moder Rav Elazar b'Mziyah Mitocho, and Mechobar, and Shnei Shtaros B'Yotz Miyom Echad. All these different topics are going to be affected because we're really getting to the core of Shtaros and how it works, and what's going to affect the Kinyan, and what's important and necessary. So of course all these other sugyas are going to be connected and impacted by that. So that's number one. A second nafkamina is how bridgeable is the gap between Rav Meir and Rav Elazar. That's like that's the heading I'm putting on this nafkamina, but there are a lot of like subparts to this nafkamina itself. Again, so how bridgeable is the gap between Rav Meir and Rav Elazar, or how unbridgeable is the gap between Rav Meir and Rav Elazar? So the first thing we saw on this was the fact that there's a machlokas rishonim about what does Rav Elazar paskin. We said that there is a little bit of a debate about Rav Meir and what does Rav Meir hold, right? Because Rav Meir holds Eidei Chasi Makarsi. There are some fringe rishonim which say even Mindir Ravanan Eidei Mesira Karsi, but we haven't really been focusing on those as much. So like the Ri, Kordon Tosfos, but we haven't really been focusing on those. Really what we've been trying to understand is the mainstream group of rishonim, such as the Rif and the Rambam and the Ravid and the Ramban on the side of the Rif. At least they defend the Rif. I don't know if they actually hold that way themselves, but at least they defend the Rif. It seems like they do. But they all hold that when Rav Elazar says, Eidei Chasi Mesira Karsi, that's one view. He also allows Eidei Chasi Makarsi Bidyavid. The Iker, like the Rambam says, is still Eidei Mesira, but he's open-minded, so to speak. He allows Eidei Chasima as well. As opposed to Rashi, which we saw, and Tosos, and the Baal Ma'or, they all think Rav Elazar is mutually exclusive. When Rav Elazar says, Eidei Mesira Karsi, he means only Eidei Mesira Karsi, and nothing more. So what does that depend on? And really, it gets to the core of this question. How similar are Rav Elazar and Rav Meir? So for Tosos, for example, it seems like they're just too distinct. Tosfos is saying Rav Elazar only holds Eidei Chasim, Eidei Mesira Karsi, because Eidei Mesira can't be at all overlapping with Eidei Chasima. And that's what the Baal Ma'or says. There's a question of, the Baal Ma'or asks a lot of questions, and one of the things he points out is, wait a second, look, Rav Meir is exclusively Eidei Chasima. And if Rav Meir is mutually exclusive to Eidei Chasima, Rav Elazar is only Eidei Mesira, which is seemingly a backward svara. Why should what Rav Meir holds impact what Rav Elazar holds? Maybe Rav Elazar holds also Eidei Chasima, right? So we explain that, no, what is the Baal Ma'or saying? If Rav Meir is exclusive to Eidei Chasima, that shows us that there is no open-mindedness. Rav Meir only believes in one track in Shtaros, the Raya track. He's not allowing for the Mesira track. And therefore, Rav Elazar is going to be exclusive also. Not that he has to be exactly the same as Rav Meir. The point is, because Rav Meir only lasts for one, it shows these are just so far apart from each other. So Rav Elazar can only hold of the other view. Or Rav Meir's. There's only, two views. You can't have any overlap between them. Yeah. Right, so then we'll get to the Rif in a second. Maybe then when the Rif says Rav Elazar does allow for Eidei Chasima, what does that mean? Does that mean he's allowing for Rav Meir's Eidei Chasima, which would be still saying there are two tracks, or is he saying something else? So we'll get to that. Yeah. Uriel.
The Ravid also from the Ban did something similar to the Baal Ma'or.
The Ravid did something similar?
The Baal Ma'or on that particular point where he said that, from the fact that Rav Meir's
I didn't see that in the Rive. That would surprise me just because the Ravid defends the Rif. So I thought the Ravid was more open to saying Rav Elazar holds Eidei Chasima also. No? On the Hasagos?
Yeah.
Really?
The last one.
I don't remember that. But it could be. Does anyone else remember that? That the Ravid holds like the Baal Ma'or, that if Rav Meir is exclusive, so too Rav Elazar. I thought the Ravid agreed with the Rif.
The Ravid agrees with the Rif.
Yeah.
He rejects the first Raya. by Ruff.
Yeah, first he says, well, I don't like your Raya, but I like your Svara.
He agrees with the second one.
Yeah, and he asks on Rav Ephraim.
And he brings another Raya from the Svara.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
This point you're saying about the Nebam War, was that what Rav was talking about, that the Edi Masira, the Edi Chasima of Rabbi Meir is going to be similar to the Edi Chasima of Edi Masira of Rabbi Lazar?
Say that, the Edi Chasima of Rav Meir.
Yeah, well, I feel like I remember Rabbi saying that, that you might want to say that the Edi
Right. So I don't think that's going to be in a second when we talk about the rift.
Here
we're just saying the Balam or Svara is probably that if Rav Meir is exclusive, so then Rav Elazar has to be exclusive because they're both holding the totally different shitas. That's what the Balam or is basically saying. Not that, because Rav Meir holds one, Rav Elazar can't hold two because they're arguing with each other, so they could only hold one, like a technical way. It's more fundamental that by Rav Meir holding of one of these shitos, Edi Chasima Karsi, it's telling us, it's being Megale, that he thinks, Edi Chasima is like a track for how to understand Shtaros. So Rav Elazar also has to think that, and he has to choose a different track.
I don't know, couldn't you say sharper? Couldn't you say
I don't think that was the point we were making, especially because you could say like the Rif, that it's more complex and you could be more like the Rif says Rav Elazar is more expansive. And in a way, and we'll see in the Ramah, in a way that it doesn't compromise how Rav Elazar reads the Psukim. But I think more the point was like if Rav Meir being mutually exclusive shows us something about this debate. That was the point, if that makes sense. Not just because he reads the Psukim a certain way, but just like the fact that he chose only, like, why didn't Rav Meir hold of Edi Chasim and Edi Mesira also? Because he could only hold of one. And if Rav Meir is only holding of one, it means Rav Elazar is like the opposite. And he has to hold of the other one. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, exactly. He liked that. I think that, like, just like we'll say, well, we'll talk about also, like, could he be Nishma from Rav Elazar to Rav Meir, Rav Meir to Rav Elazar? So this is like the parallel opposite in a way, like the Baal Mor is saying, like, yes, but no. I mean, because you can't be Nishma from Rav Elazar to Rav Meir, Rav Meir to Rav Elazar, so therefore when Rav Meir chooses Edei Chasima, it means Rav Elazar has to choose Edei Chasima, Mesira. Yeah, Akiva.
Doesn't that start break down once the Rav holds that Rav Elazar is a mutual exclusive, but Rav Meir still is? I mean, in the worldview of the Rif, even though Rav Elazar,
we're not talking about the Rif.
But the fact that Meir only holds one of them is still true in the Rift.
Right, so
how can Meir not hold a vote?
That's why Baltimore disagrees. Baltimore doesn't.
Right, no, but I think that's why. The question is going to be, when the Rift is more expansive, how do you understand that? Like, is that? So let's just say that point out. So right, another. But so again, so for the Baltimore. It sounds like they're mutually exclusive. You can't bridge the gap between them. That's Tosfos, you know, the Pashtus of Tosfos. And the Pashtus for the Rif is, no, you could have a more expanded view of Rav Elazar and Rav Meir, right? Look, Rav Elazar, he's allowing for Edei Chasima also. But it's not so simple, because, like you said, how does that make sense? Like, he's not expanding Rav Meir, he's only expanding Rav Elazar. So either the Rif could be interpreted as saying, okay, actually, what Rav Elazar is allowing for is still two tracks, like Noam was saying. Like, there's still this unbridgeable gap between them. Just Rav Elazar saying, I don't mind if you use Rav Meir's track, but it's still a different track, right? Yeah, why wouldn't you say the same for Rav Meir? I'm not sure.
Yeah,
that's a good question on the Rif.
The Balamor,
right, no, it's not such a sharp, it's not, right. So, I don't think Rebbe was, a lot of times, this I've seen this come up a few times. A lot of times, Rav Rosenzweig's not trying to ensure, say like I think this is a good svara. Sometimes what he's trying to show is like, this Rishon said this. It doesn't really make sense, but the fact that it's actually even more compelling because like, it's not a good svara, actually. So why is the Baal Mor saying it? Because he's so compelled by this lamdus. That's what we're trying to show. It happened also, like, if you guys remember, with the Kesef Mishnah, when people were very up in arms about, like, that's not pshat in the Rambam. And Rav Rosenzweig's point wasn't to show that that was pshat in the Rambam when it came to, like, Machzik Rishaso and Machzik Sotaso. The point was, the fact that the Kesef Mishnah is willing to say this tells us something about the sugya. So the same thing here, like, you're right, it's not such a good explanation. It does fall apart once you start analyzing the Rif, because the Rif isn't going to say Rav Meir Las Rei de Mesira. So it's not, and it doesn't really make sense, but if you have this background, so you could explain it in this way, and it's very compelling to say that was what motivated the Baal Maor. That's more the point. Even if it's not like an objective, like I don't think I think what Rebbe is trying to do with all of these, because I was talking about this with Eitan Kasbitz this morning, all of these Gemaras that we're going to go through, like you could choose either which way to read it, right? The Ramban has a defense, and then the Baal Maor has a defense. Like you could read it, if you want to follow the Rif, you could read it like the Rif, and if you want to follow Tosos and the Baal Maor, you could read it like them. So I think Rebbe is more interested in like what are they saying? They're clearly convinced by some sort of like underpinning preconceived notion coming into the sugya from the global evidence of how they understand the role of Eide Mesira and the role of Eide Chasima, and then they use that to like read the sugya. Again, it's not like a, you know, it's not like you know, they have these preconceived notions that they came up with. They have like this global evidence, and they're using that to approach the sugya because it's complicated evidence. This happens, you'll see this a lot in Shir also, that like you have complicated evidence. It's a stira. So how do you know what do you reinterpret? How do you know what to do? So you kind of have to have a conception of the whole sugya in order to know what's the ikkar and then what needs to be reinterpreted. And like, so the Ramban is going to have one understanding of it, and therefore like he's going to say like some dochak svaras in order to reinterpret the things that don't fit in with what he's saying. And then you're going to have it on the other hand also with other shitas who like Tosos better. They're going to say, no, you read it all wrong. Here's the ikkar, which meaning the things that Ramban didn't like, and then here's like all of our things that we're going to use. So like those are opportunities not to say like, oh, like the Gemara, like I think a lot of people in learning or maybe in other areas will do that, like, oh, the Ramban is right, it's a better read of the Gemara. That's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to show like, because the Ramban has this view, he's going to read it this way, and like because the Baal Mor, why is the Baal Mor saying that? Oh, he clearly has this view. Does that mean it's so convincing and the Rif is wrong? No, I don't think we're going to ever show that. Sometimes we'll have like a preferred Mahalach, but I think this is just an aside. I hope people don't mind this, but Avraham Wine, who was the Shir assistant my first year in Shir, so he has, he wrote his honors thesis, his YU honors thesis, on the Mahalach in learning of Rav Rosenzweig, the methodology of Rav Rosenzweig. Highly recommended. You can ask him for it. It's very geschmack. And he would always say that there's like two types of sugyas that Rav Rosenzweig will do. One is like, you know, here's like our preferred Mahalach. Like, you know, here's the Rambam, you know, will show like the contrast, but really we're trying to get to the Rambam. And like, what does the Rambam hold on the sugya? What does the Ramban hold on the sugya? And like, understanding that. And like when it came to Gittin, like we clearly had like a preferred Mahalach. Like, you know, Gittin is about Kiddushas Yisrael and it's the unraveling of Kiddushin and it's the Matir, right? And we're trying to like get to a main point. And then sometimes you'll just have what he calls like a multi-systemic sugya, where you're just like analyzing a lot of different options, but they're all equal. And there's no like preferred answer. This is kind of like in between, because I think he does want to say that Machlokes Din Rav Meir and Rav Elazar is fundamental, but he's not saying like, oh, and I think the Rambam, well, we haven't gotten there yet, but like the Rambams is the best. He's saying like, you have this understanding of it as a fundamental machlokas, and this one, there's like three or four different ways of understanding this already. So I think that's kind of what we're doing in this sugya, if that makes sense. And so because of that, he's not going to say, oh, look, the Baal Maor is so much more convincing, the Rif is wrong. It's more like, the Baal Maor is saying this svara, and it's really not logical at first glance. How do we understand it? And then like going back, and then how would the Rif understand that? It's like a little more pilpul in that way. Does that make sense? That was a little complicated. Okay. But the point is, okay, so the Baal Maor says this, and I think, you know, we were saying that was the explanation. But what happens when the Rif expands Rav Elazar. When the Rif says Edei Chasima are going to work, now what do you do with that? So does that mean that the Edei Chasima are going to be Karsi in their own right, and that Rav Elazar is allowing for Rav Meir's track? He's more expansive. But there's still an unbridgeable gap between them. Right? Rav Elazar is still saying, like, that's still Rav Meir. That's still a different version of how to go about shtaros. It's still a raya view. Or no, are we saying, maybe somehow Rav Elazar is actually incorporating Edei Chasima into his own shita, which is going to be the Shita Haran, which you haven't fully discussed yet, but is essentially saying that the Edei Chasima are actually Edei Masira, which is like a breakthrough shita and a big chiddush, but it actually ends up explaining a lot of the different complications in the sugya, which we're going to see. So I'm not really going to talk about it so much, because we haven't gotten there yet, but we've been referencing it and hinting to it throughout. But that's really like these two different things. Like, how do we understand the Rif? Is the Rif saying Rav Meir and Rav Elazar are still two separate tracks, and Rav Elazar is allowing for Rav Meir? Or no, Rav Elazar is incorporating Rav Meir into his own view. Okay, so that's like the first part of this, you know, nafkamina, you know, how bridgeable or unbridgeable is the gap between Rav Meir and Rav Elazar. The second part of this, the second like subtopic of this nafkamina, is what are Rav Elazar's Edei Chasima, and how does that impact his view on Edei Masira, right? So we kind of just mentioned that like you could say Rav Elazar's Edei Chasima are the same as Rav Meir's, or you could say they're his own Edei Masira, and what that impacts is what we saw in the Ramach, because the Rambam seems to be Soser himself, or at least according to this, should be Soser himself, and yet, you know, it doesn't seem like it's such a problem. The Rambam paskins, number one, like the Rif, that Edei Chasima are allowed b'diavad. The Iker is still b'Edei Masira, but you could use Edei Chasima, and that's going to be Kodesh. The get will work if there are only Edei Chasima. And yet, the Rambam, in Perek Aleph, Halacha Zayin, when he paskins the Sugya of Mechubar, and Kasav Vinasan, says that if you write the get b'Mechubar, then you cut it, and then you sign it, and then give it, so that's not a good get. That's not kosher. But wait a second. If Rav Elazar holds Edei Chasima Karsi, so then why isn't the Chasima also going to be Machshir the get? Right? Rav Meir, after all, who holds Edei Chasima Karsi, thinks if you do Ketzitza and then sign the get, that's kosher. So now that Rav Elazar holds like Rav Meir, oh, so he should also think that. And the Rambam paskins like that. So why does the Rambam also hold that the Chasima isn't going to be Machshir the get? Does everyone hear the question? Right? So we said that this gets down to the question of what does this expanded Rav Elazar's Shita look, what does this expanded Rav Elazar look like? Right? So if your assumption is, oh, the expanded Rav Elazar is the same as Rav Meir, so then, yeah, you have this question. But maybe the fact that Rav Elazar holds of Edei Chasima, it doesn't impact his view on the Pasuk, on what is Vikasa referred to, and what is Lashma, and what is Mechubar. It doesn't change. What Rav Elazar means when he says, you know, af Edei Chasima Karsi, is that he's allowing Shitas Rav Meir to function as Edei Masira in a way. It doesn't change anything of his own view. It doesn't change the way he reads the Psukim. It doesn't throw this whole sugya into disarray where now there's no distinction between Rav Meir and Rav Elazar anymore. And therefore, of course, it's not going to impact the Din of Mechubar. And that was the Ramach's answer, because the Ramach's what he actually says is that it's like a takana dirabanan, that Edei Chasima also work. But we can't say, it's not possible that it's a takana dirabanan, because then how could you have a get midoraisa? Right? Then that would be eshosesh midoraisa. That would be impossible. So, and it can't be that, you know, it's the two tracks answer, because then why doesn't the din of mechubar change according to the Rambam? So it must be that this is the mahalach, kind of like the Ran, which we're going to see. Yeah.
Rav Elazar is saying something like the Ran, that they function as Edei Masira. Then why would that help us in terms of reading the Pasuk? I mean, if the reason that Rav Elazar has to read the Pasuk and not sign it as Siva, not Kasima, is because he doesn't believe that the Torah recognizes Edei Chasima, then as soon as he believes the Torah recognizes Edei Chasima...
Yeah, but it's Edei Chasima b'Torah's Edei Masira.
So what? Meaning that still...
No, because he's not reading these psukim saying, oh, look, the psukim are referring to Edei Chasima, He's reading the Pesukim and saying, this is a reference to Edei Mesirah. Then, what you have is what could be considered Edei Mesirah. Right, I'm saying, meaning what is... Yes, the Pasuk is talking about Ksivas Haget. I'm saying he's... When he's like thinking of his Shita, so to speak, quote unquote, he's like, oh, my Shita is really based on Edei Mesirah, and therefore the Pasuk is referring to Ksivas Haget and not Chasimas Haget, right? And so, when he's allowing for Edei Chasima also, he's not saying, oh, I also allow for Edei Chasima. He's saying, I'm expanding what Edei Mesirah means, what could function as Edei Mesirah. And therefore, he still thinks that the Kasav refers to the Ksivas Haget, because he's not actually, meaning he's not actually allowing for Edei Chasima. He's just expanding Edei Mesirah. It's still Betoras Edei Mesirah. Which Rashi?
Rashi on Gimel seems to explain the objection of Gemara Barbalosa, the reason that he can't say it's Hasima. I don't even know. Why does he
right, oh, on the top, on the top, yeah.
It's because the Torah doesn't recognize Edei Mesirah, Edei Hasima.
Right, so his default is Ksiva.
So, we're saying...
Right, so he's still not recognizing Edei Hasima. He's just saying, I have a bigger view of what qualifies as Edei Mesirah. If that makes sense. That's just the Ran. So if that's not... Like, it's a Chiddush, but, like, the Ran is the one who set that up, and it's very compelling, because it would answer... The reason why the Ran is so compelling, is Rebbe keeps saying, is, like, when you have so many problems, and, like, look how long these Rambans are, and look how long these Ravids are, and, like, they're trying to answer each one individually, like... This Gemara, you have to interpret it this way. And this part, you have to interpret... The Lashon has to be interpreted this way. And then you have Mizuya Mitocho, which has to be interpreted this way. And the Ran is just like, I have one Yesod. It answers almost everything. So it's very compelling when you have that. And it's not like... It's a Chiddush, but it's not like a stretch. And it makes a lot of sense. And he, like, backs it up. So it's a compelling Yesod. Like, it explains... Definitely, like, the Lashon is explained very well, and... Mizuyav Mitocho point, like, what does it mean, Rav Elazar Modeb and Mizuyav Mitocho? Like, why is he being Modeb and Mizuyav Mitocho if he doesn't care about Edei Chasima? Not Elamai, he cares a little bit about Edei Chasima, but doesn't necessarily have to be as far as the Rif takes it, which is why Rav Elazar doesn't say Af Edei Chasima Karsi, because he doesn't really believe in Edei Chasima. He believes in Edei Mesirah. So I think it's very compelling. Is there another question? No? Okay. Yes. How they explain the Rambam? Yeah. Right, so I don't know. I think... I think the Ramban says the reason why we don't say Af Edei Mesirah Karsi is because it's like, it's a little misleading that, because then you're going to think that you would also require both for Rav Elazar. If you said Af Edei Mesirah Karsi, you would think, oh, I need Edei Chasima and Edei Mesirah, which is not true. You need one or the other for Rav Elazar, the way they're taking the Shita. But that's like, again, that doesn't help you with all the other problems, but it helps with that. So I think that's why the Ran is very geschmack. Okay, and then the last point, which we also already discussed, is can we be Nishma from Rav Meir to Rav Elazar, or from Rav Elazar to Rav Meir? And the more distinct that these two views are, the less likely we are to learn from one to the other. But the more there's like an overlap, right, the more Rav Elazar is a raya, then the more we could say, oh, yeah, you could learn from Rav Meir, which is about raya, to Rav Elazar, which is also about raya, just to a lesser extent. And so on this, the Rishonim debate, could a person appoint a shliach to sign, to be an aid for them, basically, like to do the chasimas aidos for them? And so let's say, just to make it clear, so someone needs something signed, and they say to me, Josh, could you please sign? And then, you know, as Rebbe was telling us, you know, I'm very afraid of my handwriting, and, you know, I never passed
penmanship,
right? You know, and my whole life I have trauma. I'm going to therapy for my penmanship trauma. So I don't want to sign. But he asked me, he said, you know, I really want you to sign this shtar. So, you know, it's a kesuva. I'm going to hang it up in my house forever. I really want your name on it. It's just like, you know, you're my best friend. It's like, well, I don't want it. I have this trauma. So fine, maybe... What I'll do is I'll say, okay, Yedidya, could you please, like, write my name for me? could you write, you know, Josh Appel, the shliach for a chasimas ha'edus? So, most Rishonim think that obviously not. That's not going to be okay. But Rabbeinu Simcha says, yes, that's okay. Why is that allowed? So he says that, look, Rav Elazar thinks that the pasuk of Vikasav refers to Ksiva. Ksiva Saget, like we just mentioned. And Rav Meir thinks, no, Vikasav in the pasuk refers to Chasima Saget. If Rav Elazar thinks that Ksiva Saget could be Ayidei Ashliach, which comes from the pasuk of Vikasav, so then why can't Rav Meir, who thinks that Vikasa refers to Chasima, think that a Chasima could be Ayidei Shliach, mid Rabbi Elazar Nishma l'Rav Meir? He uses that exact Lashon. So it's crazy Shita. Number one, it ignores the fact that, like we kept mentioning, that maybe, even if we could be Nishma from one opinion to the other, maybe a signature is too much of a Davar Shebegufo to be Nitan Shlichos. That's number one. But maybe even more than that, you know, how could you say that we'll be Nishma from Rav Elazar to Rav Meir? Maybe they're totally different. And the Or Zaruah, for example, he totally agrees with Rabbeinu Simcha. He says that's a crazy Shita. And so maybe this is part of this whole framework. How bridgeable is the gap between Rav Meir and Rav Elazar? So I think that's really, I think we mentioned most things. We definitely didn't, like, you know, I'm not trying to go through all the different Rayas yet of the Ramban and the Baal Ma'or and the Ravid. You know, for, I'm just bringing up the framework, and that way now we'll have an approach when we're reading all those Makoros inside, and when Rebbe is reading them and making these points, instead of them being subtle and maybe going over, you know, our heads, we'll say, like, no, like, this fits into this part, and this fits into that part, and here, you know, because now, like, for example, now we have a way of saying, oh, the Rambam is, you know, going to be this Edei Kiyom track, and, you know, some Rishonim are looking at Rav Meir and Rav Elazar as a Raya, and some are looking at them as completely different, and Rav Elazar is all about the Kiyom, and Rav Meir is all about the Raya, or Rav Elazar is about the Kinyan, and Rav Meir is all about the Raya, so hopefully this will be helpful, and everyone should have a good day.